Hello and welcome to the MotoGP podcast, episode 3, coming to you after the Qatar test. So obviously that's what we're going to be talking about this week. We had a pretty interesting few days of track action in LaSalle, and we're ready to try and get to the bottom of all the best stories before we go racing in now less than 2 weeks.
Yeah, pretty interesting is probably a little bit of an understatement, if I'm honest.
I am British, so I tend to just downplay it unless it's obviously certain current events.
Unbelievably polite, basically. Yes, of course. Well, we come away from yet another preseason test, and it is Maverick Viñales who topped the combined timesheets of the final test. But as you're going to be hearing a little bit later on, not exactly well in the Yamaha camp. They're not quite ready, as him and Rossi talk about, but we'll get onto that later. Second place, though, rookie sensation Fabio Quartararo, and then Alex Rins in third. But I guess the biggest story of all, which we're going to be talking about a little bit more in depth, is that 15 riders covered by 1 second in the final preseason test. Is this going to be, I'm going to say it again, the best year that MotoGP's ever had?
I mean, how many times can we ask that? No, we've had absolute classic seasons one after another recently.
Yeah.
And like you said, yeah, 15 in the second, but it's not even, you know, it's not those guys who maybe you'll just be able to get in that top 15 and have an interesting race. The 15th rider was actually Dovi. So the 15th rider is the guy who's runner-up twice in a row. And yeah, obviously he didn't really seem to put in a time attack on that final day.
No
Dovi fan panic, please. But just to say, you know, it's not the guys who you'd necessarily expect to be on the fringes of that top 15. It was really, really varied throughout. We had the likes of Pol Espargaró in 8th overall, super impressive from the Spaniard on the KTM. And yeah, pretty mixed up and very, very competitive. Really exciting stuff.
I'm going to say something a little bit bold and say the guys like Dovi, you don't need to worry about them, because even though they're far down, because they know exactly what package they've got and what they're taking to with them to Qatar. The ones at the front, I think they really did make an effort, because up until now they've been a bit unsure about how's it actually gonna go. So that is sort of their kind of level at the moment. I think we've had a lot of, well, as we're about to talk about as well, there will be a lot of mind games going on, probably a little bit of sandbagging from this person, from that person, but there's been a lot of honesty and lots of things which people just aren't able to hide how they're truly feeling in this test.
Yeah, definitely. I think, like you said, with Yamaha, you can see on the combined timesheets, there's sort of all the Yamahas in the top seven, and on day three only, Rins's best time that puts him in third overall was actually from day two.
Yeah.
But day three only, there were four Yamahas in the top six, and yet they had a not quite so positive things as some of the other guys. But I think it was a little bit of a, not a damp squib is a bit too extreme, but I think the wind really played a bit of havoc on day
absolutely.
Three and meant you couldn't really get that proper benchmark from everyone.
No.
And, you know, it's difficult out there when you've got a plan and then the weather changes a bit. You can't necessarily just read the timesheets and go, well, this is how it's going to be in the race.
Yeah, nothing. And also, no prizes for testing is there. That's the whole thing about it. We get that debate every single time, every single year. Oh, what can you read into testing? Can you actually read anything into it? I think you definitely can. We're going to have a bit of a stab at it now. But up first, the first feature on this episode we have, because we do have it's not just going to be me and Fran discussing what actually happened in testing. We have three guests. We have Randy Mamola, we have Matthew Burt, and we have Simon Crafar. So up first, we caught Randy Mamola because he was so kind to come in and co-present the After the Flag show that we have at the end of testing on each day. So we caught up with him straight afterwards, fresh off the show, because Randy, with so much experience, not just as a rider, but been a pundit for so long, 40 years, he told us, he is probably the best judge of whether this is just as competitive as MotoGP has ever been. So we asked, we put that question to Randy, and up next is what he said. So, delighted to welcome another special guest onto the Qatar Test show on the podcast, the third episode this will be now, won't it? So, Randy Mamola joining us to talk all things the Qatar Test. And Randy, one topic we really want to discuss with you, a man with a wealth of experience, not just in the race itself, but of course being a pundit for many, many years. How competitive the field is at the moment. We just had day three, 15 riders within a second. Has it ever been better than this?
I don't think so. It just keeps getting stronger and stronger as the seasons go on, from straight across the board. The riders, I think there's been some risk at taking some riders that people thought out of Moto2 to bring them into the MotoGP class, and when Zarco came in, he excelled right away. So there was a lot of questions that were being answered really quick in that category. There were only a few teams that select riders really wanted to go to. Now, straight across the board, you're getting a lot of top-rate machinery. You know, we have to keep in check that it's only KTM's third year with their MotoGP project, and it's coming on strong. They've got to get Danny Pedrosa as quickly as possible in the test seat.
Recovered and whatnot.
Exactly. But when you look at it, the structure of the new Petronas team with Morbidelli and Quartararo, you know, they finished in the top six, both riders, of the last night. When you look at Suzuki, Mir has imaged like a Mir, just right behind Rins, and learning a lot as well. So there's a lot of things that straight across the board, the engineers that are in each garage, I think that's also being supported. Obviously, when Ducati has their satellite teams, they put their engineers in there. Yamaha, the same, they've always done. KTM's doing that. Aprilia only has their one team. Suzuki only has their one team. But that's what's important to make this championship better and to make the regulations strong enough that we can see it work together.
Yeah, it's really been coming on. Just that it's really been building over the last sort of several years to this point now where we are entering almost like this, I personally think, a golden era. I don't know what you guys think.
I mean, definitely. I mean, and the Simon said it over the weekend, if you want to say worst bike or the less spec bike is a 2018 Ducati. Mm-hmm. The rest are the same. The Honda in Nakagami's on a 2018 spec. But with those manufacturers around them, engineers in those garages, those 2018 specs sometimes are going to be good to have, because when they go to a racetrack for settings, they already know those settings because Dovizioso went through it and so on. So, again, that side of things really important for team morale, for personal morale and so on. One team I didn't mention, we didn't mention very much tonight, and I don't think we did, was Rabat and Abraham, in the Vintia team. You know, it's another team that now has two motorcycles the same, in the same garage, so therefore those riders can help one another to try to grow and get inside that top 10, that all-important top 10.
Absolutely.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's great to see, especially Carol Abraham. He's the rider who's made the biggest jump in terms of machinery, going two steps forward in one change. And like you said, all the bikes now almost new, the best they can get, really, as well as the riders being incredibly close together as well. I think if you look back in 2016, we had all those different winners in that season, but there were a lot of different factors, and it wasn't just a kind of race where nothing else, there's no other circumstances. And now you can conceivably see that amount of riders winning races this year without maybe rain or something crazy having happened.
So yeah, the difficult part is when you have a bad day, exactly what Simon said, you're going to have a bad day outside the top 10.
Exactly,
you're no longer going to be able to remain inside the top 10. And staying healthy is going to be so, so important. It always is, but even more so now, because when there was only one or two guys to be able to beat the guys in the front, now there's four or five guys that can race for the victory here and on different machinery. You know, it's competitiveness straight across the board. And, this is what the riders have to feel. And you have to really try to pick and choose what garage you're in and what garage you're trying to beat. Because it's to actually go right straight to the top into the front area, that first three, those are going to be classically the riders with the most experience. The riders that we know that have gone race distance in that situation. But equally, it's going to be exciting to see these rookies, where they can finish, who can be in the top five right away and or not, because there's a lot of factory guys that want the top five.
Yeah, definitely. Obviously, race distance is a bit of a different prospect compared to a fast lap on timesheets in testing as well. Race day pressure. As we saw, Zarco as a rookie, obviously, in Qatar. Absolutely incredible performance, but it's difficult to keep that to the end of the race. And obviously he fell off then, but having made that incredible impression already. So looking at preseason as a whole now, who has been your biggest surprise out of the two tests that we've seen now?
It's hard to just choose one surprise. And that's because the amount of talent and the two different racetracks we were really at. I think that the learning curve of the rookies is going up steep. coming from the Valencia test when we first saw them preview. Oliveira, who's on the KTM, I think he has a completely different outlook than Zarco, because Zarco knows what he had, knows what it could be in terms of feeling for himself, where Oliveira doesn't. Everything's new to him. There's so many things in this championship to talk about. There's just not enough time, to share that all. But reading between the lines and looking at Jorge's face, I know him very, very well. And just knowing him, he's very concerned about his wrist at one stage, but he also knows that he's got it. For him to go that close to Mark's time in that short period of time, with missing the first test of the 2019 season in Sepang, a lot of downtime for his shoulders, muscles, everything, not being able to do the things that he'd like to do to stay fit.
So you say that's your biggest surprise then?
I think so. I mean, I wouldn't have said with his broken fracture and so on. So that is a surprise. That's a good thing to see. It's nice. Also, that's going to encourage Cal Crutchlow to want to push harder. He's going to have to rob some of that data from Honda to understand, because Cal didn't get the whole test for me underneath that. I think when you heard Lucio Ciccanello, the team boss of LCR, he stated exactly what they were doing, and they had to share the workload of doing that stuff. So on that side, it's quite well.
Okay, that's good to know. I was just wondering one more thing about Vinales at the top. For me, when I see that, and given what he said on day two, he seemed sort of, we talked about it earlier.
Sidestepped.
Yeah, that sidestep, and then sort of the downturn in his mood and responses was quite puzzling. But then again, he finished the test top of the times, as he did top tests last year, and of course we all saw what he did in his debut year with Yamaha. What do you read into that?
You know, underneath those team briefings goes a lot of, tit for tat. And Valentino, the comments that he came out with last night, that we heard today, but last night, were quite strong in saying it. And I reacted to that on tonight's program for our television program, that Valentino was telling the truth. You know, he's really hoping that he's wrong and that Maverick's right, that they can get something out of this thing. Again, very open-minded. Quartararo gets on this bike and he just rides it, and so on. I think Valentino's closer to Morbidelli. So Morbidelli could be getting some rub off on, what he hears from the Italian side of Valentino. Valentino's voice carries no matter how much or how quietly he wants to talk. Uh-huh. And you have to go along with what he's saying and what is true. But he also has that knack of being able to take the technology-wise, the data-wise, and everything, decipher it with him and understand it and go onto the racetrack with changes and be able to adapt to that. And I think that with Maverick Vinales getting lost last year after having such a good test, preseason testing, starting to go, he did have a victory last year. It's the only victory of Yamaha in the last couple of years, which is really important for his mentality. Tonight I said on the show, he's got to keep that momentum. He's got the momentum going. He complained. Dovi complained. Dovi didn't say that he had the best thing. He didn't say it, but he wasn't worried. And that's what Maverick cannot do. He cannot worry about it. He's got to confront those fears. He's got to confront those particular things that he has issues with. He's got to ride around some of those issues. He's got to handle the fact that the Ducati's going to pass him on the straight most of the times, and not get frustrated on it. He's got to ride his way. The Suzuki, the same. We haven't really talked too much about Rins in this program, in this podcast, but that kid is ready. He's firing on all cylinders. That team's got a good support around him. Mir's got a great teammate alongside of Rins, and I think that's a sweet spot as well for Suzuki. And it's something that's going to be so exciting. Nothing is going to go unturned, and nothing's going to be boring whatsoever across the board come Qatar in 12 days' time.
Thank you very much for joining us, and quite late as well now in the office on the set after the flag.
You've got to drive home after this, haven't you?
Yeah, no problem. Listen, it's been a pleasure. I really enjoyed my time when I worked for Eurosport and or with Dorna on doing it. My time is taken a lot of times at the Grand Prix, but I wouldn't mind stepping in and out of the mic here and there from time to time.
We'd love to have you on the podcast more often, Randy. Absolutely.
Cool. I hope the fans feel the same way.
Always. Come on. Absolutely. Always.
Thank you very much, Randy.
Thank you very much.
So some really interesting stuff there that Randy brought up about all different things, starting off obviously with that incredible level of competition that we talked about. He said he obviously knows Jorge very well and was pretty impressed with his day three performance, and it was just 0.040 that Lorenzo was off Marquez by the end of the test. Obviously neither of them at full power, but that's some pretty impressive stuff considering everything for Lorenzo, that injury and the fact that it's a new bike that's had, he's not had that much track time on it at all. So we're going to hear from the five-time world champion now after the end of action on day three, just a little bit about what they were working on that day and how they managed to make that step.
It's just my third day as official rider in Valencia. And Jerez, I wasn't fit, so it was also very long time ago, so we didn't have enough time to be very, very ready for the first race, but in the last day here we make a very big step forward, so that means that when I will be fit I could ride a little bit better and we could improve even more small details, we can be even stronger, so I leave this track very, very satisfied and looking forward for the race. So very satisfied. That shows that we have potential, and if we keep working, we can go very, very high. No?
So Jorge, you can hear, I mean, he's not, as he said in the previous interviews before the test, he's not going to be completely ready in terms of his fitness for Qatar. That one-off lap pace will be really reassuring to him, that and because he's already, I would say it's pretty fair to say that he is at a better level now with Honda than he was at this stage with the Ducati when he first joined them. Once he gets over the scaphoid injury, his race pace will pick up, his race fitness will pick up, and he'll be a real threat, not just over one lap as well. Might even surprise us in Qatar.
Maybe. I think it's an interesting one. And I also think another element this time around is that it's not that he's been on one bike since he came into the championship. He does now have more experience of not only two different kind of machines in the Premier class, but also he has experience of that change. Mm-hmm. And obviously Ducati, their relationship's now come to an end. But by the time it had, he really had got that. It was absolutely, he'd cracked it. And he was on it, and he was as fast as ever.
Yeah.
So he obviously knows, you know, how has a little bit more experience now of how to make that switch, and maybe what he needs to work on to adapt to the bike. Mm-hmm. But obviously, there are some things as well that the bike adapted to him, certainly at Ducati with the fuel tank and things like that. We've seen a few little changes like that at Repsol Honda
as well. They basically completely copied the fuel tank, didn't
exactly,
they?
Exactly. Yes. So that's obviously a Lorenzo special now, not just on the Borgo Panigale machine, but it is a pretty interesting question, I think, how that's going to play out, and that injury, it should take him a little bit longer than certainly the Qatar race to get back to full strength. It can be a difficult fracture to deal with, a scaphoid, but we will see. And then what about his teammate then, Marquez?
Yeah, well, you'll hear from a lot of the riders later on, they still think Marquez is going to be a huge threat in Qatar straight from the off. He was looking very, very fast indeed. But you'll hear later on, we pitched a question to Simon Crafar about Honda and their updates, particularly the engine. There are some mixed receptions about Honda's motorcycle in the Honda camp, not just from the Repsol guys, but from Crutchlow, Nakagami as well. But Marquez, yeah, he also had his first crash testing that shoulder properly.
Yeah, he had a few in the end, but that first one was obviously the big headline, and no harm done, at least to him.
Cracking shots, though, came from it, didn't they?
Cracking shots. Oh. I hope they weren't cracking. Well, but
He hopes. And many, many people are. But so Marquez, good to know that he is crashing but okay. I just thought I was going to just finish that sentence really quickly. Good to know Marquez is crashing. Not the kind of message we want to spread out on this podcast.
No, but it is Marquez style, you know, pushing it to that limit, finding it. And, yeah. You know, if it wasn't strong enough to be able to take those sort of low side, fairly low speed tumbles, that's a real issue for him. And that would really mean that he was riding well within himself for quite some time. So I think it's good. It's almost a bit of a relief for him, I think. So here's what he said after day three. A few interesting things here, and definitely not back to 100%, but it's a very different story to be heard on a few days, especially in Malaysia.
Today, you know, I feel ready to start the season, and I was working in a very good way. Today we did a few steps, but still it's not, I don't feel 100% together with the bike, but yeah, I feel I come back with a good feeling, and yeah, Qatar. We must understand everything, and it's a track that normally we struggle, and we are there. So this is the most positive thing. Yeah, today we're struggling a little bit because you know, was colder than usual. It was a lot of windy, and then I'm normally riding with the hard front tire. And then for that reason, I didn't try the long run because with hard front tire was too dangerous, and yeah, I tried a different thing. Just I did 8 laps in a row. I saw that physical condition, okay, it's only 8 laps, but I was okay. I feel ready to start the season, and yeah, we work hard, we work in a good way, and I'm very happy how we finished the pre-season.
So now we'll move on to Alex Rins. He has been super, super fast pretty much everywhere all of the time.
And conversations sort of in the office, Rins, we're sort of tipping Rins for a few people going out there saying Rins could be a real frequent race winner, possible championship contender this year early on. I said it I can't actually remember if we put it in the podcast in the end after the Sepang test, but I expect wins from Alex Rins this year. My God, that sounds weird.
That's a nice rhyme.
Yeah, well, I just can't wait for anybody to just... Steve and Bertie, they're obviously going to scream when he crosses the finish line, Rins, wins! So, you know...
Yeah, it's a name made for glory, really.
Absolutely.
But, yeah, I think he's really showing that it's by no means just one-off laps, and he's looked super confident. Team manager Davide Brivio at Suzuki even said, like, with Alex, we're ready to race now. And that was on day two. So, you know, Petrucci also said something similar, but obviously it's pretty interesting when you get that. But what about on the other side of the garage and Juan Mir, who's a little bit more under the radar as a rookie initially? So we saw Mir actually taking quite a big step forward in the test. He seemed pretty happy. And he said also the key was he'd prepared well for the race, which is good to hear. Obviously, he hadn't just been working on his adaptation to the bike, also working on getting ready for the Grand Prix. And he also said that he made a mistake on his time attack, is what he seemed to be saying, the Mallorcan youngster. So that's pretty interesting because he was the second fastest rookie. And if he had made a mistake on the time attack, we've still not quite seen the full hand from Juan Mir. So that should be good. We did, though, see the full hand of another rookie, didn't we, Qatar test.
Fabio Quartararo, pretty much, I think, the revelation of that test. Well, come day three, I think the whole Yamaha camp was a bit of was the revelation, really. Everyone thought, where did that come from? But Quartararo, extra special. I did actually read on Twitter that he misread what his lap... He did a fast lap, misread what the time was, thought it was a second slower than it was. He was like, right, well, I'm having it this time. And then put in a 54.9, which was seriously, seriously quick. Quartararo, super impressive. I'm not going to say straight from the off. I think very easy to get too keen and say, oh, well, Quartararo, oh, we could be expecting podiums halfway through the season. Take it one step at a time, but he's adapting so well.
Yeah, definitely. And you did say one thing that was pretty key. The opposite to Bagnaia and what he'd said in Sepang after doing that fast lap, which was that he needed to still really work on that race pace. Fabio said kind of the opposite. So let's hear a bit from the French youngster now.
I'm really happy about today, the work we do with the used tire. We make 14 laps with a really good pace. Still need to improve some things to change the electronic, but anyway, I'm quite happy because also the lap time, the time attack was really fast, and that was our weak point in the past. So I'm really happy. I can disconnect my brain for one lap, and I think that's the positive point we do between Valencia and now. So yes, maybe we'll we will need to work a little bit more on this area, but yes, of course, we make a big step.
So yeah, like we said, different stories there from Quartararo and Bagnaia in terms of where they've made their biggest steps forward. Bagnaia seemed to almost effortlessly bang in that fast lap around Sepang. Quartararo, obviously, that had been the thing that was holding him back for a while. Pretty interesting, along with Mir in the mix. And then, like Randy said as well about Miguel Oliveira, he's pretty impressive on that second KTM, yeah. As it was at the end of the test. He was the second quickest Austrian machine behind the ever-impressive Pol Espargaró. So, that's pretty interesting stuff. I think the rookies should be a great show this year.
Oh, what a fight that is going to be. I just can't wait to
keep updated. Yeah, definitely. Rookie of the year. I don't think it's ever been more difficult, to be honest.
Nope, but, not at all.
So now, from the Bagnaia a little bit, we've got a tenuous link that will move us on to talk about Ducati.
Yes.
Obviously, he's on a Ducati. So like I said earlier, Davide, it was absolutely seamless. We're pro now. Three episodes in, rule the world. But Petrucci was another one who, like Davide Brivio at Suzuki, seemed pretty much like, yep, ready to race now, let's go. So that was pretty interesting. And he's also been quicker than Dovi overall at the end of tests. Mm-hmm. So far, so that's also another interesting one. But Dovi, much like compatriot Valentino Rossi, never one to really blast out the gates in testing.
No.
So can't read everything into that.
Especially Dovi being so competitive in the general championship standings over the last 2 years. He knows exactly how quick he is. He knows exactly also what he can do in Qatar. There is absolutely no use in him really pushing, potentially throwing it down the road and doing what, and for getting an injury on a similar level to Lorenzo and Marquez et al, you know?
Exactly. At this point as well, Dovi has the natural advantage of going into the season healthy. So that's mm-hmm. even more important, like you say. So the question on everyone's lips was one that Simon Crafar put to the man himself after Dovi ended the test down in 15th. Let's see what he had to say.
Andrea, I'm going to take a risk and guess that you were one of the few guys confident enough not to go for a lap, just to work on your work for next week's race.
Well, yes and no. I can say yes, but it's not come really true. Yes, we didn't work a lot for the lap time, for sure. But the feeling is not 100%. I think it happened a lot of things in 3 days. The condition changed every day. And I lose a little bit the feeling. We try a lot of things. So we don't have the situation very clear. But I don't think we have to be worried about that. It was a bit strange because everybody were fast today. But you know, I think the race weekend is always a bit different, and we have to see the condition we will find during the weekend race, because every day in Qatar can change the weather, the wind, the humidity, and affect a lot. But I don't have a lot of things to say. I think the feeling is we finish the test not with a perfect feeling. But overall, about the pace for the race, we are not too bad. I think we have to be focused and relaxed in this week before the race to understand, analyze. We have a lot of data. We did 6 days with a lot of laps. We did a lot of long run or half and half. So we have a lot of interesting things to study, also because yesterday we did a lot of laps with some tires, this today with a different tire. So we did a lot of work and in the right way. Unfortunately, the speed, it wasn't there at the end of the test, but I don't think we have to be too worried about that.
So now that's enough of us talking about the riders and a few snippets from those guys. It's time to introduce our second special guest of the show that we've been teasing a little bit throughout. Had one cameo so far. Simon Crafar will be coming back onto the show now, and we're going to talk about some tech.
Who would have guessed we'd have our pit lane reporter on the podcast again? yeah. We did catch up with Simon after he finished the After the Flag show in Qatar. We wanted to ask him three specific questions, which we wanted to know what he had been seeing down on the ground in pit lane throughout the 3 days. So here is us catching up with Simon after day three. Hey Simon, end of a long day's work there. Good to hear your voice again, mate.
Hey Simon, nice to catch up with you again.
Hi Matt, hi Fran. Hello listeners, great to be back on your show. I've literally just sat down after running around for the 3 days and lots to talk about. What would you like to know?
So yeah, so the stories that are coming from pit lane, and that there was so much new tech down in Qatar. People bringing out new parts of fairings, aero and whatnot. But first question I wanted to ask you was, what do you make of GT's magic box of tricks? The amount of new parts being tested by Ducati all the way back into Jerez sparked so much. It's actually now at the point it's sparking debate about whether are these all genuine new parts for Ducati, or are they playing mind games with everyone, with the other manufacturers? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, you're right. This paddock's full of mind games. You're right. But it's super impressive, their box of tricks. They just keep pulling them out. And I think part of that is to do with, you know, they're so free-thinking, inventive, you know, not restricted like some of the factories, you know. But also, I think it comes down to them being so ready. At November tests, you know, Dovizioso was saying he's pretty happy with the bike. It's difficult to improve from here. And when you haven't got much else to work on, I'm not saying they didn't have work, but when you've got less to work on, you've got more time to think about new tricks. And they certainly have, you know. It looks quite Formula One-esque, you know, with thinking about aerodynamics, you know, right down to those carbon dishes off the front wheel that run from the bottom of the forks to the rim, basically, just above the ground. And there's nothing behind them, because I had a look, and it's clearly just getting the airflow smoother across the bike, you know. And much like last year, how they were working on the shapes of the forks, you know, putting covers on them to guide air into the radiator at the hot races, and also a little to the aero package, you know. So I think they've spent a lot of time in wind tunnel, and they've been influenced by Formula One, and they're thinking those ways. And when the paddock has the same tires, the same electronics, when it comes to hardware, there's so many restrictions now, and they've got to start thinking outside the box and all the little things that could make the difference.
So a lot of talk about the new Honda engine in Qatar as well. What have you seen and heard about it up and down pit lane during the test?
Yeah, Honda have clearly done their homework. You know, Carl said it's better. Lorenzo pointed out that they're no longer down. The Hondas on the Ducatis here, like they were last year, top speed-wise on the front straight. They've obviously done their homework, and the bike looks good. It's, you know, even with injured riders at Sepang, they were still able to do some pretty impressive times. And I think they've really done their homework. It's just chassis-wise, Carl's pointing out that it's not right. You know, he can't get the front feel braking turning in like he could last year. And I could sense last night, so end of second day here, that Honda had a problem, but as much as I dug, I couldn't find exactly what it was. I couldn't find out. I thought it was engine, because they were braking engine, you know. So I thought, it must be that. You know, you could see on their faces there was something not going on. Carl's not happy. Ryder's working on things. Lorenzo not looking so happy, but also he's trying to learn his new bike and injured wrist. But what I'm trying to say is, I thought it was engine. Carl's saying it's chassis, you know, not being able to brake and turn in like it could last year. So all the riders, he's saying, have different opinions. It sounds like him and Mark both agree that that's where the problem is. Lorenzo's saying something different apparently, but as Carl pointed out, he doesn't know this bike. He didn't know what it was like before, and so Honda obviously taking on everyone's opinions, and they're trying to fix it before race day. But yeah, it's a little bit scary. But the only thing is, you know, worse come to worse, they know what geometry the old chassis was, and they might have to pump out some of those, because the engine on this one's good.
Yeah, I can't wait to see what, it's going to be all hands on deck really at Honda between now and Qatar, just to 10 days away or so before FP1. Be interesting to see what they actually managed to roll out after that. Just one more question for you, Si. Plenty of aerodynamic updates to fairings in this test again. Of course, we actually saw a brand new tail unit as well from Yamaha. Do you think everyone has a clear idea of direction with the aero now?
Yeah, I got to say, I would say everybody's decided on aero now. Suzuki, all four of their bikes had the new aero package we first saw at Sepang. It's a slight different version, but yeah, and they're happy with it. That's fixed. You know, Ducati's new one, I think they've been decided on quite a while, but didn't want to pull it out, you know, until last possible. It came out today all fully painted up, ready to roll. KTM, their one hasn't changed over this test, not that I know anyway, but it looks identical from start to finish. Yeah, same as Aprilia. Yep, they're fixed, but they have a new one at this test. We saw it for the first time, and Romano Albiciano, the team manager, said that it was a step forward. Both riders like it, they're going that way. Iannone especially liked it. So yeah, Yamaha Maverick today was going back and forwards flat out with the new aero we first saw on the Yamaha at Sepang. So, yeah, Yamaha may be the only one that I think could be undecided, but Valentino Rossi didn't even want to try that today. I never saw it on his bike. It was only Maverick. So I think they're fixed on the old one, you know, the one they had last year, Yamaha, and that Maverick was just double-checking and making sure, you know. It was windy conditions, so slightly different than normal. And finally, with Honda, I would say that they've known for some time as well, because both Lorenzo and Marquez and Cal Crutchlow had the new version that we first saw on Sepang, and they left it on all afternoon when they were doing longer runs and things. So to me, that it's pointing out they've decided on their new one as well.
Right, perfect. Cheers for that, Simon. Thanks so much for catching up with us again and again being on the podcast. And hopefully we'll speak to you again soon.
You're more than welcome. Anytime.
So that's all the talk from the test, I think, pretty much. We've heard from Randy, riders, Simon, ourselves, you know.
Obviously, but, you know, we're that same pro level of opinion.
Yeah, if you need a few more decades of experience to get to that level, don't we? Our final guest on the show, Matt Burt, of course, the main presenter of After the Flag. We wanted something a little bit different from him. Bertie, been in the paddock, coming up to 25 years, I think he's about to say. So many stories
we
the
did.
Man has.
We promised we'd get him a cake for the big 25, which is coming up soon. It's not this season. I think it's next season or the year after.
Okay, so we have time to save up.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. We asked him, like, can you think up of some story related to the Qatar GP that you can tell us on the podcast? And here is how that went.
So obviously this week we've had the Qatar test, and again we had the pleasure of welcoming Matt Burt to the Barcelona office alongside special guest Randy Mamola. So Matt, we've got you here now on the podcast, and we thought we'd do something a little bit different this week and ask you for a story from your many, 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 many decades spent in the MotoGP paddock.
You're making me feel really, really old here, Fran.
Nearly as many years as I've been alive.
I thought we were going to steer clear of how old I was and how long I've been in the paddock. We're going to go down that road,
can't.
You know.
It's something that lends wisdom to your stories, and everything you say just gets that tinge of you know, respectability.
Do I have to give you the 50 so. Euros now or later, okay?
50?
Oh, was that not what we agreed?
No. So, yeah, obviously, we've got Matt in the studio again this weekend for the Qatar test, and we thought we'd ask you to share one of your stories from your time in the MotoGP paddock.
Well, as you have already mentioned, I have been in the paddock long enough to have had the pleasure to have been at every single one of the Qatari Grand Prix in MotoGP, going back all the way to 2004. So, tough one to pick just one moment, but I'm going to have to go for 10 years ago now. I can't believe it is a decade ago. 2009, the great event that never was until Monday night, of course. 2009, I will never forget that moment, sitting in the media centre. You can imagine what it's like now, all the buzz, the excitement, the hype and anticipation as we prepare to go back to Qatar in a couple of weeks' time. you imagine now that the riders are on the grid, just about to start the warm-up lap, a new season, all that excitement that comes with the start of a new season. I remember looking up at the TV monitors thinking this could be the best season we've seen for such a long time. Casey Stone on the Ducati again, Valentino Rossi trying to defend the title on the Yamaha, Jorge Lorenzo coming to prominence as he was then on the Yamaha, and then there was a monsoon in the desert. You could not have made it up. It was incredible. And as we know, unfortunately, the riders were wheeled off the grid. The race didn't happen. And we had to all come back and do it again 24 hours later on the Monday night. But yeah, that's the one memory that really, really sticks with me about Qatar.
So that night then, was it literally everything's ready, lights about to go out, and then suddenly, like, someone's almost tipped a bucket on the track? Was it really
pretty
that extreme?
Much. Yeah, I mean, I remember there'd been a bit of disruption in the 125 race because there had been rain earlier on. You've got to bear in mind that when we first went to Qatar in 2004, everybody was telling us it only rains here 7 days a year, and when it does rain, it hardly rains at all. So we were pretty confident that, you know, 365 days in the calendar year, we'd be able to dodge and avoid any kind of rain disruption. But of course, Sunday night in 2009, the opening Grand Prix, 125cc race was disrupted. I remember the 250cc race was shortened. And then we thought, great, okay, well, the main event, that's going to go ahead. We're going to have loads of drama, loads of excitement, loads of tension, like always in MotoGP. And it all fell a little bit flat. And when I say the heavens opened, I'm not lying, I'm not exaggerating. You know, perhaps back in the day when I was a motorcycle news journalist, well, I just put a little bit of topspin on a few stories, but this one, not. I mean, it was a proper deluge in the desert. There was no way, of course, we could race at that time. We know even now, under the Qatar floodlights, you know, it's very, very difficult to race in the rain. So we all had to go back to bed and come back and try on the Monday.
So talk us through sort of what, you obviously being the journalist, you would have been most frantic of all, probably you trying to get some answers from everybody as to what was actually happening at that precise moment.
Yeah, absolutely right, Matt. I mean, you know, collective thud of jaws hitting floor when we realised that the race wasn't going to happen because it was just impossible. You couldn't run it on safety grounds. And then, of course, behind the scenes, there's frantic discussions going on between not just the FIM, the International Race Teams Association, and officials from Dorna, but of course all the Qatari officials as well. A logistical nightmare, as you can imagine, to try and keep 1,500 or so people in Doha for another day to get a MotoGP race on. Got to say, the organisers did an amazing job. We actually did get to race on the Monday night. Casey Stone eventually did take the victory. But I remember just sitting there thinking, OK, click straight into journalism mode, running around, going, speaking to officials to try and find out exactly what's going on. And of course, it became pretty apparent that they were going to try and race on the Monday night. Back then, a lot of the flights out of Doha left on Monday morning in the early hours. I remember Valentino Rossi was kind of wandering around the paddock looking a bit puzzled, going, hey, I'm not going to do a really dodgy Italian accent.
So we're going to get the full deal then.
I'm not going to do any...
My eyes widened again. Oh, no.
Don't worry, listeners. I'm not going to break into any really shocking VR46 impression. But Valentino was going, well, hang on a minute. My flight is out of here at 3:45 a.m. Everybody was pretty much, to a man and woman, due to leave Doha that night. So there was frantic rebooking of flights, rebooking of hotels, making sure that all the air freight could leave 24 hours later or whatever. I just remember, of course, you know, as journalists, we're one of the last to know about exactly what was going on in terms of the race being postponed until the Monday. And teams, as you'd expect, we've got loads of advance information. And by the time I came round the next day to try and book a flight home, every single flight out of Doha now is an incredible, massive international hub. Massive. It wasn't 10 years ago. Still a pretty major international airport, but I couldn't get out of Doha until Friday. So what I thought was going to be a race on Sunday
got
night, home on Monday. No, I was still in Doha on Friday. But I do remember, Matt, actually, when the realisation came that we were going to have to come back on the Monday, Motorcycle News back in the day, although it came out on Wednesday, it was printed on Monday evening in the UK. And I was thinking, OK, well, the race is going to start at about 9 o'clock local time in Qatar. That was around 6 or 7 o'clock European time in the UK. And I knew that they tended to go to print at around 8 or 9 o'clock. So it was one of the sort of most harum scarum moments I had in my great career at Motorcycle News, because basically I was told that, yeah, you've still got 6 pages to fill in this week's issue, but you've got about an hour to get it all banged out after the checkered flag gets thrown. So, yeah, it was all fingers and thumbs on deck that night.
Well, there was smoke billowing off your fingertips,
yeah,
basically.
I can't imagine trying to get through that in that amount of time.
But so you'd say that was probably the most stressful time, one of the most stressful points of your journalism career?
Yeah, definitely one of the most stressful times, yeah. I mean, that's when you really, really are tested, yeah. I mean, I knew, obviously, that going to bed on the Sunday night, the race was going to happen on Monday, but I was kind of keeping my fingers crossed, thinking, okay, well, maybe they'll just bring it forward. You know, let's say they'll race at 2 or 3 o'clock. That gives me a little bit of leeway, a bit of a window. But yeah, we, as always, you knuckle down, you get through it, and eventually, I'm happy to say, there was a Qatar Grand Prix, and we did eventually start the 2009 MotoGP World Championship.
Exactly, and yeah. What an amazing championship it turned out to be, and it seems crazy now that that's 10 whole years ago, and we're going to start another one.
I mean, that's the scary thing, yeah. I mean, to me, it feels like last week, really, but yeah, to think it's 10 years ago now, and a man we just mentioned as well, Valentino Rossi, he was in the paddock then, and here he is, what, 10 years later, at the ripe old age of 40. He's like a good old red wine, isn't he? He gets better with age. And there he is in 2 weeks' time on March the 10th. He'll be back on that very same grid.
Hopefully,
trying to win that elusive 10th world title. Yes, I've got everything crossed right now, Matt. Hoping that,
exactly.
Yeah, there will be no rain. Although I think it'll be slightly less stressful for me this time around.
Yeah, just a little bit. All right, well, thank you very much for that, Matt Burr. Thanks for joining us.
Absolute pleasure. I'm so chuffed to have been invited. I've spent some time in your illustrious company. I hope it's not too long before I get asked back.
I don't know a really polite way to say what I wanted to, but calm yourself
what,
down.
The word no.
And hopefully,
two letters.
Hopefully, we'll invite you back on another episode sometime during the season, and we'll get some more insights into 20, 30, 50 years in the paddock. Is it?
Not quite that, but yeah, I've got to say, my quarter century is not a million miles away. Yeah,
yeah,
25th
we were
anniversary
talking about this the other day. We're going to make
quarter
sure we get you a cake.
That's why I'm shaving my head nowadays, you know, because what I have got, it's basically like Father Christmas. It's white.
Oh, Bertie. Okay. Thanks a lot.
Thanks. So big thanks to Matt Burt for joining us on the podcast this week. Just a little something-something to whet your appetites for the Qatar GP, which will hopefully be a little bit drier than that.
Did you use the word wet your appetites and then drier intentionally after that story?
I actually didn't do that on purpose, but I realised that I'm a secret genius.
I wouldn't describe it as that, but yeah, that is that is it. Not just from Qatar, but pre-season testing as a whole. Almost Moto2 and Moto3 will be in Qatar next weekend. I'll be there for that, doing some coverage of that. That'll all be on MotoGP.com.
Yep, exactly. And ahead of the Qatar GP, which is the weekend after, thankfully, finally, it's coming. Get ready to race. We've also got some pretty exciting stuff on the web with some articles about different things, sort of dedication and potential and different sort of themes that make up the sport. We've got the riders actually writing a few articles themselves, so they should be good to check
riders
out.
Riders writing articles themselves?
Riders writing articles themselves. That is actually a tongue twister, but we've valiantly made it through it.
I'd be worried about your writing job, Fran, if I was you, if that's the case, or not.
Not so sure about that.
Okay.
But there's some interesting stuff from those guys, so it should be a good time to check out the website ahead of the first race. And yeah, hopefully we'll have a lot more to talk about after that first Qatar GP coming soon.
Yeah, absolutely. And plenty to come for that new format as well, which you've not seen before. Going to be getting lots of interviews on site, as we did promise. But what's on the show next week, Fran?
Next week, we are going to have the inimitable Casey Stoner, the 2007 world champion, 2011 world champion, two different manufacturers. And it's pretty good timing, really, because obviously Casey had some great moments at Qatar. So tune in for that. We promise it's 90% Stoner. We're not chatting too much. You can just hear direct from the man himself about some really, really cool stuff. So that should be a really good listen.
Perfect. Well, we will see you next Thursday.